Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Rohrkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we're bringing it back to 2024. Once again, we're talking about movies that have been released so far this year. We've chatted about a few, Dune Part 2 on the main feed, Challengers most recently, but we will be filling in all of the gaps in everything we haven't talked about so far this year, see how we're feeling, maybe tease a couple things about what's to come. But how are you feeling about movies so far this year?
It's really tricky because we have this happen every year where I think for the first few months of the year, we are just so laser focused on covering the Oscars and doing our contender series that any movies that come out are sort of a respite from that. It's kind of fun, I think, to see things that aren't nominated for Oscars. But the beginning of the year is always really rough, I think, for the most part. You know, a lot of the best stuff comes out at the end of the year, comes out in the summer. And I will say that I wish we were talking about Challengers again today. That is how I feel, I think, about the year so far. A lot of the releases we'll talk about today, I'm fairly mixed on. Somewhat negative. I don't like to be that way when it comes to movies. I wish I could, I think, appreciate everything that any film has to offer. But yeah, we're going to be talking about some rough ones today and some good ones. But I think most of the good ones that we'll talk about were actually movies that had festival premieres last year and delayed releases. So we'll get to those. But I think one of the fun things that we're doing today is that we actually categorized all of our releases into different categories. So we have January, February, Dumpuary, franchise IP, festival releases, biopics, and horror. So those are the categories we'll be talking through, but it'll be fun regardless of how these movies really are. What do you think about 2024 so far?
There have been some highlights, and I'm very excited to mention those. But yeah, it is just kind of this weird mix. It's hard to really figure out what the year's going to look like. Last year, we had a few really great movies come out before Cannes in the early parts of the year, including Past Lives, Passages. But I feel like this year, there are fewer films so far that I'm super passionate about. And I think part of that is just the rollout of films, too, in terms of what goes to streaming and what's in theaters. It seems like that placement of films now also is way more unpredictable. Like, some movies that are coming out on streaming should be in theaters, and I really want them to have theater releases, like Hitman coming up. I'm like, please show this in theaters because people will love this. But It's just more of a question now, and I hate that part of it. Yes, movies are coming to streaming more quickly, for better or worse, so maybe that plays into it a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I'm ready for Cannes releases to come out or have release dates show up. I'm ready for summer releases. I'm ready for fall releases even, because so far, not super great overall.
Yeah. So as we go through these movies, there will be some that both of us have seen, some that just one of us has seen. And with each of these, we will be saying nom or bomb. So we're bringing back that game. If we say nom, that means we recommend the movie. We think you should take the time to watch it, whether it's a trip to the theaters or watching it on streaming. If it's a bomb, you can go ahead and skip it. So let's get right into our first category, January, February, Dumpuary. Our first movie here is Argylle, which is now on Apple TV+. I saw this movie. You did not, correct?
I haven't. And I feel like the general consensus was bomb, or that the twist wasn't worth seeing it, or the connection to The Gentleman and Henry Cavill with that. Is that right?
Yeah, so this is directed by Matthew Vaughn, who did The Kingsman. This was the trailer that played endlessly before every movie, so much so that I think no one wanted to see it by the time it came out. This movie is 139 minutes. And you feel every single minute of its runtime. This is, of course, this spy movie about this novelist named Ellie Conway, played by Bryce Dallas Howard. The script feels like it's generated by AI, and these actors really just have no charisma. And I really just can't forgive them for how they treated this movie Cat. That really just, it sealed the deal for me for this as a bomb. So I have to say, Argyle, if you're interested, don't waste your time. This is a bomb.
I thought maybe I would watch it at home with Apple TV Plus, but I think with, you know, like Dua Lipa's only in 5 minutes, or like did Taylor Swift write this movie as like a ghostwriter? Yeah. Like there are just so many things. And with your recommendation, I think I'm putting it off until I really have to, or if I'm really trying to boost my year numbers at the end of the year. But until then, we'll be watching other movies.
Mm-hmm. Tortured poet Matthew Vaughn. And then we had two more that you didn't see that I saw that I can give quick notes on. So the first is Drive Away Dolls. This is the film by Ethan Coen, and I really think it's so funny that in true birth order fashion, the Coen brothers, in splitting up, did just about the most stereotypical things one can do. The oldest brother went and made this serious, black and white, formalist film, The Tragedy of Macbeth, a Shakespearean adaptation. And the younger Coen, Ethan, made a lesbian sex comedy that is an ode to the Bee movie and the Road Trip movie, which is just so funny, I think, seeing both of their sensibilities in such different ways. I enjoyed this enough, I would say. It's solid. It definitely has its flaws, but it's a fun watch overall. I think that what I took away from it mostly, though, was that I prefer both Coens when they're together. I think that Margaret Qualley is really going for it here. Her accent is something. And Beanie Feldstein, I think, is quite funny. Geraldine Viswanathan was my favorite actor in the film. I think, though, overall, like, there are some great cameos from Colman Domingo. I won't spoil Matt Damon's role in it, but overall, I think it's a fun watch. It definitely, I think, leaves a bit to be desired, given what we've come to expect from the Coens, but I'll give it a light nom. I think it's, you know, fun enough to watch, and I did laugh quite a bit when I was watching it. And then the next one is Lisa Frankenstein. Lisa Frankenstein is Zelda Williams' directorial debut. This movie takes place in the 80s, and it's about this girl named Lisa who spends all of her time in Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. She is sort of a loner, and one day, one of the bachelors from the grave that she tends to comes to life. His grave is struck by lightning, and they begin this relationship. It's a little bit Frankenstein. It's very Edward Scissorhands. I think that the movie itself is really fun in certain sections, and in others, it can't really find an identity of its own. The big thing here is that it's written by Diablo Cody. And I have to throw that in because your mileage may vary on Diablo Cody. I think if you like Jennifer's Body, watch this. This is not up to that level, I don't think, at all. I don't really feel that this has the makings of a cult classic. But I think if I were 16 watching this, I would really, really enjoy it. The music is fun. I think that Catherine Newton is also fantastic. I was thinking a lot about a young Helena Bonham Carter taking on that role if this were made in the 80s or the early 90s. So yeah, I think, again, a light nom, especially when considering what we have in this category. It's not really very original, but I think it's sort of a fun feminist Frankenstein tale.
And then some other ones. So we had Madame Web, which took the internet by storm, took us by storm, really. It's a total mess, but it worked for me because I think Marvel, maybe by mistake, but whatever the reason may be, understood their place to me and created a fun, still action-packed superhero film with a leading star who understands the company's filmography like I do. Dakota Johnson is giving us nothing and everything at the same time. The fact that the trailer made it seem like it would be a completely different film, I think it's just so many things along the way. There's also the sound issue and the ADR of the villain that is just so off-putting that it feels weird that this movie even got greenlit to go to screens, that there was a final edit and that this was it. Like, is this a good movie? No, absolutely not. But is it fun? Did everyone have fun going to the movies, seeing it, rewatching it with friends? Absolutely. And now that it's on Netflix, I cannot wait to watch it again.
I just watched it again this weekend. And let me tell you, this is a fun time because it is so bad. And this is one of my favorite theatrical experiences of 2024. No joke. Mm-hmm. Because everyone that was there, in my crowd at least, seemed to understand that this was, it was honestly similar to when I saw Cats in theaters. Like, no one there was taking it seriously. No one could believe the product placement, some of the lines, Dakota Johnson at the baby shower, where she basically refuses to play any of the games. It is just such a nightmare, such a mess. But at the same time, did I have a better time watching this than nearly every other comic book movie that I've been forced to watch over the years? I did, actually. And I think that's because it just doesn't really take itself seriously at all, or at least I think if you try to take it seriously, you're going to have a miserable time with it. This is one of those movies that on Letterboxd for me is a 1-star heart. That's just what I have to say about it. Like, the filmmaking here, the ADR, I really can't believe what they did with Tahar Rahim's character.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even funnier just how different characters or actors will show up. Like, all of a sudden, there's Shoshana from Girls operating a system that's like Garcia from Criminal Minds. Or all of a sudden, there's Emma Roberts at the baby shower. And you just don't understand. Like, it just doesn't feel like a film that you can actually judge or rate properly at all. But for me, it's like how a lot of my favorite comic book movies are like Josie and the Pussycats and Supergirl and these movies that are, you know, not serious mm-hmm. at all, but they're really fun.
1-star construction, 5-star entertainment. We can put it that way.
You know, death by Pepsi. I'm a Coke mm-hmm. products person, so.
Diet Coke all the way.
Diet Coke all the way.
And then we also had Mean Girls, which was one of our first releases of the year. We both saw this. This is now on Paramount Plus. This, to me, I'm going to say bomb. I think also in covering the original on our Patreon made me really love that film and show me why, even after 20 years, it still stands as this incredible high school film. And I don't think in 20 years we'll be talking about the musical movie version of Mean Girls.
Yeah. This is an easy bomb for me. One of my least favorite movies of the year. I don't think it's as bad as Argylle, but this movie just felt like you were watching a compilation of TikToks. The editing I thought was really poor. And for Mean Girls to work, like we talked about with the 2004 version that we grew up with and loved so much, Regina and Katie have to be evenly matched. And this is 100% Renee Rapp's movie. Like, it is her show. And it's impossible not to root for Regina the entire way through. There's just no other character that you care about. At least that's how I felt when I was watching it, which isn't her fault. I think it's really just this movie itself felt like a parody to me. It didn't feel like a real movie musical.
I do have this rated. It's tied with This Is Me Now, LOL. How do you feel about the J-Lo Ben drama as of this past weekend?
Well, Patrick Zweig took over Dunkin' Donuts. So, like I said, Ben Affleck is on notice on our Challengers episode. So he had to do something to take the spotlight back, to get the attention. He knows we're only months away from Leo season. But he and J-Lo have been spotted together since these separation rumors. So I can't keep up.
Yeah. Messy, to say the least, whether that's This Is Me Now, which I also gave 1.5 stars as I did Mean Girls, but we can wait and see about J-Lo and Ben. So let's move on to franchise and IP. Maybe not a great continuation for us.
I was going to say. These are all you, for the most part. I have not seen any of these except for Dune Part 2.
Which we would both nom. I feel like when we talk about franchise and IP, we have so many more coming this year. But we're talking about Marvel or Disney or those kinds of things. And we only have Disney here because they took over the Planet of the Apes franchise. That doesn't really count. We have Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. I haven't seen any of those new reboot films. I don't plan on it. We have Godzilla vs. Kong, the new Empire. Based on the last movie, I didn't really plan on seeing this new one. I think if I have free time, I may go see it or watch it at home. But again, these aren't the movies on the tops of our lists. So the two I did see, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I had really high hopes. I decided on a Thursday that I would go see this with a friend the following day. Had I seen the reboot trilogy before then? No, I hadn't. So
did you watch all of them that day?
For the next 12 hours, I watched all but 30 minutes of that reboot trilogy, which is not a feat I ever thought I'd accomplish. I'm actually impressed with myself.
Yeah.
I overall loved that trilogy. Have you seen those three films?
No. And I was going to say, I mean, so much of this of like the reason why I haven't seen Godzilla Kong, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Kung Fu Panda 4 is really just because I needed more time to do the homework. It's sort of that situation where if I heard, for instance, that Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was this incredible new film, I think I would have then put in the time to do it, to watch that trilogy, but I haven't seen them. I've only seen Planet of the Apes, the 1968 version, which I highly recommend. I think it's a great work of science fiction. But these new films, I've only seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I did not like it. So I didn't feel the need to continue on. So I'm just a few movies behind. But if you tell me I should watch them, maybe I will. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife. Listen, I will do anything to support Carrie Coon, but that was too much. So I drew the line with Frozen Empire. But I want to hear more about your apes journey.
Well, I liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So maybe you just shouldn't see any of them. But that to me had this really smart concept of this reimagining of this really iconic science fiction film. Like you mentioned, James Franco worked for me, at least throughout the film, and in how these apes really form this other society. And in seeing the human characteristics that they were embodying and this hierarchy of power that they were inheriting from watching humans. And I think throughout that trilogy, it advances so smartly that by the end of it, with this really shocking finale, you understand how apes have become humans and how the life cycle of different organisms really just is cyclical. So I was really excited for Kingdom, especially after these rave reviews, but I felt so let down. I don't know if it's that they want to restart another trilogy and they're just moving the idea in a completely new direction, but I felt like all of the action, which previously had a point to it or was used in service of the plot, was all just fancy camera effects and to have fighting sequences. And I didn't really enjoy that. There is some good camera work in that, but it's also this really heavy-handed biblical narrative, which I think could have been really interesting, especially being years after Caesar's reign from the reboot trilogy. But I think the politics of where it ends in terms of where humans are, where the apes are, is just a total 180 on that other trilogy. And I was kind of upset by that. It's doing very well at the box office. And if it gets people to theaters, great. But this is a bomb for me.
I love how you said this is a bomb for me. And now I'm like, maybe I'll actually see it. Maybe I'll put in the time, watch the entire trilogy, and then watch this.
I'd be interested in what you think of it. I'm curious if we would align or not. But I think hearing the ape say evolution was just like, I was out fairly early.
That sounds like something Cassie Webb would say in Madam Webb.
And then the other IP film that I saw was Kung Fu Panda 4, something else I had not binged in a day, but more recently to want to see this. And it's not the worst in the series. This is a soft nom for me. This is a great background movie. My favorite is still the first, but I think it is smart in how, like the previous films, it's Poe, this dragon warrior, and the Furious Five, and they're fighting these villains. And this film, there is no Furious Five. So there's no Angelina Jolie. It's just Poe and some new characters. The villain is voiced by Viola Davis, who I really love as a villainous character. Mm-hmm. She's this chameleon. And some of the others that had been there throughout the other films. But I think it's a fun time for families, for kids. Again, I don't think it's the worst movie of the year by any means. But I could also understand why you hadn't seen this before.
I just hadn't seen all of them, so it wasn't one that I was prioritizing. I always say, like, oh, I haven't had that much time to see these movies, and I realize it's because, one, I saw Challengers 5 times, but two, I also have just been going to a lot of rep screenings. That's, I think, one of the things I've realized about living in New York, but also in the beginning of the year, we just have such fantastic repertory programming in cinema here that I've just been going to see old movies in theaters instead of a lot of these new releases. But if you say nom, maybe this will be a plane movie for me. Would this be a fun plane movie?
Actually, yes. This is a great plane movie. We need to put these in that category.
Good.
And it's funny you saying, oh, I haven't had enough time. Kung Fu Panda 3 came out 8 years ago. So I think you've had some time.
Yeah. Wow. Putting me on red. It's true. I have had time. I've had plenty of time.
Oh, just teasing. But some other movies in the category. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. This is a remake, I believe, of the original from the 80s with Christina Applegate. I really want to rewatch that movie. And the Garfield movie, which is out as of airing of recording. I don't know if I'll see this immediately, but I'm curious how this will do in theaters.
I love cats and I don't like Chris Pratt, so it's just a conundrum for me. Just, what do I do? Our next category that we have, also a little bit tough, biopics. So the one I did see here, Back to Black. This is, of course, the Amy Winehouse biopic from Sam Taylor Johnson, starring Marissa Abella, who was in Industry, one of my favorite shows on HBO. Love Industry. Love her in Industry. This movie, I think ahead of its release, people were really worried about it just because it hasn't been that long since Amy Winehouse passed away. We have the Oscar-winning documentary Amy that I think really takes a forensic approach to looking at her life, going through all this footage and I think really showing, you know, what her life was like and giving us this experience from her with some authenticity. And should anyone have made a biopic about Amy Winehouse? I don't know. It might be too soon. I think in this case, it definitely was. What was so disappointing for me in this movie was that there was hardly any attention given to Amy Winehouse's artistry, her ability to craft these incredibly emotional and intense songs, her voice. I also didn't get any understanding of why Camden was so important to her coming up as a young artist. Instead, the movie focused on her horrible relationship with Blake Fielder Civil and her relationship with drugs. Honestly, a pretty cruel biopic, and there was one scene in particular where I cried because I was so angry at how they were depicting her. So yeah, I do not recommend this. I think this is a bomb. It's not a bomb because of Marissa Abella's performance or her singing or anything like that. I think she actually does the best that she can with the material. This movie's flaw is its screenplay and in blaming Amy for her tragedy. I think that's really the saddest part of it all. So yeah, I don't recommend it.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah.
We also had Unfrosted, which was deeply, awfully reviewed, the Jerry Seinfeld Netflix film with Melissa McCarthy.
It felt completely soulless. It didn't feel like a real movie. I mean, we throw out things like, oh, this was created by AI or written by AI. This just, it felt like it didn't have a creator. It didn't have a soul. There's a Mad Men segment in this that I couldn't believe was real. So this is a bomb.
Like recreating Mad Men? Like,
you've got to see someone... it to believe it.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I don't think I will based on that review, but if I ever do, I'll wait for it. Our next category, we have horror, which we've had so much of and actually have so much coming this year. So that makes me really happy. I saw Abigail, which is the ballerina vampire movie that I was really excited to see. I think if you want to go with your friends and have a good time, I'll nom this. Is it really good horror? Is it something we haven't seen before? No. But I think some of the kills are great, very bloody and gruesome. It's also really funny. Put Catherine Newton in any movie and I will see it, except for Lisa Frankenstein, I guess.
But... I was just going to say, Lisa.
I'm like, oh shoot, I have to go back and watch that now.
I think you will hate it.
That's what I'm worried about. But one of the directors of this, Tyler Gillett, worked on some of the newer Scream films, so... I think some of that plays in well here, but yeah, I'll nom this. And then another one that just I saw was Late Night with the Devil. This is like a really fun play on late night TV shows meets 70s supernatural horror. And I think if you like those, you'll really like this movie. Some of the late night hosts, played by David Desmalchian, gets to be too much. Like he's trying to...
Is he networking it?
Yeah. I think just those characters are overacting to promote their show and impress the audience. And that was just too much for me. I mean, that's, again, who these performers are. But I think the twists with the hypnosis and communicating with the devil are actually really impressive. I would probably actually say soft bomb for me. But I think if you enjoy the things that I mentioned, then definitely see it.
Okay. I really want to see this. The times were really weird in theaters here. Like, I could never find a time to go. But now that it's on streaming, I think I will watch this at home. But everyone I've talked to, except for you now, I suppose, did really like it. So I'll watch it and I'll let you know what I think.
It had pretty positive reviews out of South By, where it premiered last year. I think you'll like this actually more than I did.
Well, it takes place in the 70s too. So that I feel like.
Exactly.
It's the setting I like. Next up, we have a movie that we both saw. This was Immaculate, the movie where Sydney Sweeney plays a young nun named Cecilia who goes to a convent in Italy and things take a very dark turn. What did you think of Immaculate?
I enjoyed most of the scares. I don't think it's doing anything super revolutionary in terms of horror. I think people who are completely shocked by the ending and are rating this 5 stars need to watch Mother, that I think I mentioned recently too when I rewatched it. And J-Law's performance there and what she has to do, I think is similar to how Sydney Sweeney treats this character. But it's also nothing like Rosemary's Baby or Carrie that we've had years and years ago. So I think some of it is exceptional. Not enough of it is, I would say, for me. But this goes in a soft nom category. How did you feel about it?
Well, this is a bomb for me. I wouldn't recommend Mother. I would recommend, though, Rosemary's Baby, which this film is trying very hard to be at particular times. But it does not have any of the filmmaking skill there to really conjure up a mood. This, I think, just feels like a copy of other movies, unfortunately, and that's why it didn't work for me. And another film I'll recommend is Paul Verhoeven's Benedetta. I think that Rosemary's Baby and Benedetta are fearless movies that use Catholicism to dive into very controversial things around women's existence in the world and wielding power, or what happens when you don't have power. And I love both of those films very much, and this just paled in comparison. I also really didn't like the ending. I think for all of its shock, the additional themes that came up with the ending just didn't make any sense. I think in the world of the film, I don't want to spoil it, but I don't understand why these things happened in the way that they did. I'm not a person who needs everything to be spelled out for me. I love ambiguity, but this one really just, it did not do it for me. I'm going to have to say bomb. And I love horror with Catholic themes. And that's why I still need to see The First Omen. I'm very excited that's coming to Hulu on May 30th. So just a few days away. I'm looking forward to it. Got really good reviews. And I just rewatched The Omen from the 70s with Gregory Peck and Lee Remick to prepare. And I really love that movie. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I need to see that one as well. Some other horror films that haven't gotten great reviews. The Strangers Chapter 1, which came out last week, I've heard just hideous things about, unfortunately. Night Swim, Tarot, Sting, also not great reviews, or it seems like they passed in the wind. Like, no one really talked about them or saw them, and they were in theaters for a really short time.
Mm-hmm. And on this note of bad horror films, I saw Imaginary, which is in the running for the bottom of my 2024 list right now. We need to stop this trend of treating our elder actors poorly in horror films. First, we had what they did to Ellen Burstyn in Exorcist Believer last year, and now we have what they're doing to Betty Buckley in Imaginary. So I didn't think this was scary. It went on and on. I think I was hoping for it to be a little bit funny or kind of campy, like Megan, with this imaginary friend concept. But yeah, this one didn't work for me either, so this one will be a bomb.
I paired together this and If, like we did on our 2024 release episode, because this came out.
I was laughing so hard that you put If in the horror category, and now I'm understanding why. Because it is horrifying. John Krasinski making a movie about imaginary friends.
With Ryan Reynolds, and the box office is doing fairly well. Again, this is another one that I may put on the back burner for now, but it's out in theaters if you're into that. Also, our next category is festival releases. So this is either Sundance, South By from this year or from last year's festival. So some of even Cannes last year films are coming out now, and we'll be promoting some of those that we really love too.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get into this category. I think we were a little glum going through the first ones. I mean, it was fun to talk about them, but now I think we're getting into a lot of our really strong recommendations.
Mm-hmm. So first off, I had Babes that I saw very recently. This is out in theaters now. This premiered at South By, rave reviews. I felt similarly. This is a hard nom for me. It brings back some of that great wit that we have from Broad City. So Alana Glazer helped co-write the script. Pamela Adlon, who I love from Better Things, is directing, and I think everything that they embody in this film is just incredible. Also, Michelle Buteau as co-star to Alana. So there's this accidental pregnancy that Alana as Eden has in the film, and she has to figure out what to do. Can't really say more about that, but the friendship between the two female leads, Dawn and Eden, is incredible. I laughed my butt off the whole time. And then for the final 30 minutes, I found myself sobbing just uncontrollably to like a past lives level amount.
Whoa.
And it was a lot. And part of that is this idea of motherhood and all of that that they explore in the film, but having a baby. And I think just being at a time where you're in your mid-30s maybe and figuring out like where the rest of your life is going, whether that's with a family or if you're single, and the ups and downs of those journeys separately. Mm-hmm. I think they weave together the storylines perfectly, and it's something that groups of friends should go see and have a fun time with. It's one that I cannot wait to rewatch.
I'm really excited to see this. I told you I was hesitant based on the still of them eating sushi on the subway because that kind of disgusted me that you put your food, open food containers on the subway seats. But I'll be able to get past that, I think. It's gotten really positive reviews. People seem to be having a really good time with it. So I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I think that too, it's so uniquely New York. It's just embedded in every minute of the film. So like you would never eat food on the subway, but that's the point of that sequence.
Okay.
And like having to spend over an hour to meet one of your friends who lives across the city, like that's part of it too. So along the way, there's a lot of New York love that I love to see on the screen. I think you'll enjoy that part too.
Okay, good. Next up, we have Alex Garland's Civil War, which is out now on VOD. You didn't see this one, correct?
No, I haven't.
Wow. Okay. I'm kind of surprised that you haven't seen it.
I've been hesitant, and I do want to eventually because overall ratings are fairly high.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just scared from his past few films that I was lesser on than Ex Machina and even Annihilation.
Yeah. So this one, it's hard because it feels very empty as time passes. I think it's very thought-provoking when you're in it. I actually felt pretty numb when I was watching it, which was a really interesting experience. I think just thinking about where we are politically, what's happening in the world, and how Garland chooses to show that. I love the editing and the sound work in the movie. I think that the way that he captures these journalists and their work is really interesting at times. That's why I'm excited for you to see it, or why I want you to see it, because I think you would have thoughts on how he uses that medium and how he uses composition to share how these journalists are feeling and how they're trying to be objective and what that really means. So I just feel like for me, when I try to draw anything deeper out of this, though, I can't. I kind of hit a roadblock. And that's how I feel with a lot of Alex Garland movies. It's that I think he really wants to try to say something, but he pulls his punches. He can't actually go there. I think he's a little bit scared too, honestly. I think it's cowardice. I think it's laziness somewhat as well in the storytelling. This movie, I would describe it as just louder than bombs. But when you get down to it, it's sort of empty. The dialogue is very on the nose at times, and I also had trouble with the characters, specifically the Kirsten Dunst character and the Kaylee Spaney character. They felt like archetypes to me, nothing more than ciphers and not complete women. I felt that that was very predictable with where their characters were going, and there are these chilling moments, but they don't really amount to anything. Like, there's a great scene with Jesse Plemons, his character, that's really terrifying. But it takes the most obvious approach imaginable. And I think I just wish Garland would have pushed it a little bit further. The same goes for the ending. So as much as I didn't care for this film and I haven't really thought much about it, I, for the purpose of this exercise, I will say Soft Nom just because I think it's worth seeing to talk about and just to see how you feel about what he's putting in front of you, the images. It's not the type of movie that I was led to believe it would be from the trailer. I think I expected it to be really smug, very over the top. It's not that at all. It's not like an Adam McKay movie. It's not like Don't Look Up. It's something entirely different. And it's very thought-provoking. And it's, for someone I really, really despised, his last film, Men, that was one of the worst experiences I've had in a theater. This is far better than that, I think.
Okay. I'll definitely see this one. Part of that just, everyone thinking this movie would be about one thing from the trailer and it not also just put me on edge, but I'll go see this one.
The next one that I have that I just saw months ago at this point and I can't wait to see again because it's out in theaters is Evil Does Not Exist, Hamaguchi's new film. I have not been able to stop thinking about this since I first saw it, and I saw it September of last year, so I'm overdue for a rewatch. It is a haunting film about environmental violence, really. It's so beguiling, and I think that some viewers will find it really frustrating because you can feel the film slipping through your fingers. It's hard to grab onto, and he really plays with the structure and how time works in the movie. It opens and it's very slow. It's very deliberately paced. And as the film progresses and the violence on the environment escalates, so does the tone and the pace of the movie. And I just think that Hamaguchi is an incredible storyteller and a poet. And the ending, again, like I said, I think it will frustrate. I think it will confound. But I think it is really beautiful in how it mirrors climate change and violence on the environment. So I don't want to give too much away. That's all I'll say, but I highly recommend it. And for anyone worried about runtime because of Drive My Car, his last film, it's 106 minutes. That's for you. This is obviously a nom, though, for me.
I have really been wanting to see this. I definitely will. One that we both saw, I'm surprised that you saw this, was The Fall Guy, the biggest film that we've been hearing about since the Oscars with Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. You know it's bad when you're mid-film and you look over at your mom and she says, "Oh, this is bad," aka my mom.
Oh, you took your mom to see this? Oh.
I think they kind of wanted to go and I was like, okay, I'll go.
Yeah.
There's really not much else out.
It was that or Challengers with your parents.
It really was. And I was okay with seeing The Fall Guy if that was the decision. I really liked Hannah Waddingham in this movie. She's playing this conniving manager.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, I liked her.
Oh.
She's also
this, Ted Lasso love is jumping
out.
Yes. Yeah.
It is. It's different than her character there. And she's being super quirky. And it's so funny seeing her as a Diet Coke addict. I feel like in one moment, she's just so overly caffeinated that she like can't function. And I'm like, I know what that feels like.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
But I think the script on the whole is just not great work. The finale is impressive in the camera work that they have done. And I think in where the script is leading us, you know, to have this conclusion, not only to this movie, but the movie in the movie and with the investigation that's going on, I think that whole part is smart and it's a funny way to end the movie. I also didn't know that The Fall Guy was a series from the 60s or the 70s.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Lee Majors.
Yes. But seeing them come back in the end and that shock, there was also like an end credit sequence and then a post credit sequence that we were there for just because we didn't move until the very end. And my parents were like, nobody's going to see that sequence. And that's when Lee Majors comes out.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Why are you surprised that I saw this? Because it's an action movie and I don't go to action movies very frequently.
I don't think you would have gone to see this for Emily Blunt or Ryan Gosling single-handedly. And these like big action movies, yeah, neither of us like them.
Yeah. I really didn't like this. I thought that I might. I really thought like maybe there's a chance I'll have fun with this because I really like Ryan Gosling a lot. I like Emily Blunt. But my problem with it, I think, was that I didn't laugh at all. The humor didn't work for me. And I think for a comedy, I needed to be funny. And I didn't laugh. I felt like it was very into itself. And for a movie that's also supposed to be a romantic comedy, I wanted more scenes with Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling actually sharing the screen. They share the screen so infrequently throughout this movie that I found that a little jarring, where I would kind of want them to be back together. And I know that's also part of the point, is that you want them in the same room. But there are so many set pieces also in scenes that I would have cut from this movie. Like, I didn't understand why we needed to be in Aaron Taylor Johnson's character's house twice. I didn't understand the entire scene with Stephanie Hsu, why we needed that. That felt like just extra tacked on to add to the runtime. I feel like there are audiences, though, who will really connect with this and will think it's fun and will have, you know, it will be a fun summer blockbuster. But for me, this was just, it was just one of those things where I was like, I was reminded oh, this is not my kind of movie. It had that sort of Taika Waititi humor that is really grating. Yeah. The voiceover from Ryan Gosling at the beginning, Aaron Taylor Johnson doing the Matthew McConaughey impression, Emily Blunt making this Dune ripoff. I don't know. It was not for me. Not my idea of fun, unfortunately.
So a couple that I saw that you haven't seen also is Girl State, first off. This is the follow-up to Boy State, made by Jesse Moss and Amanda McBain. I really love Boy State. I don't think what they're doing with Girl State is as provocative. It's more about the inequality between those actual programs and how the girls just don't have as much money to have these really intensive conversations about politics and to have things pass. And I think the filmmaking is a bit safe, whereas it wasn't in Boy State. So I think it was just harder to capture something that was as charged or provocative as it was before. But this is playing on Apple TV Plus. I would still nom this. It is a good watch. Something I've mentioned multiple times, How to Have Sex. This is on Mubi. This came out at Cannes last year. It did win the Un Certain Regard Award at Cannes, and it had a few BAFTA nominations as well for the team. I really enjoy all the performances in the movie. I think younger audiences will appreciate this. This kind of fits into like a Gen Z filmmaking style that I think is coming around more and more in filmmaking, but it has a lot to say while still being really fun. And I am giving this a hard nom.
And then two more that I have. I'll start with the bomb. That is Roadhouse, which I can't believe that I watched. I mean, if you were surprised I watched The Fall Guy, how surprised are you that I watched Roadhouse?
Well, this may be less so because it's Jake Gyllenhaal naked for like 2 hours. Is that why?
I've been caught. You found the reason why I watched Roadhouse. It is strictly what Jake Gyllenhaal looks like on that poster. I was willing to set aside 2 hours just to see Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately regretted that time. This movie, to me, felt like a movie for people who listen to the Joe Rogan Experience. That's not a kind comment. And it also felt like it was written by ChatGPT. I couldn't really believe how bad this was. So this is a bomb. And time for my nom. So La Chimera, which I've talked a bit about, I think last year when I had seen it at festivals. I saw it at New York Film Festival. And then again, later, it's out in theaters now. This stars Josh O'Connor. It's by Alice Rohrwacher, who I really love. This film really just swept me away. I would go see it again. I wonder what you would think of it, actually. But it's just this really, really beautiful film about the ghosts from your past. And it has this magical realism quality to it that I really love. It's about this man named Arthur, who's this archaeologist, and he's looking for his lost love. It is so beautiful. I really love this movie and obviously love Josh O'Connor in it. I think that he really can do no wrong, but especially with this and Challengers, there's such different performances. And this one is just, it just warms my heart and also breaks it at the same time. And he speaks Italian the whole movie.
Oh, well. Now that we've seen Challengers, maybe I'll put it back on my watch list. I was scared for a while because of how it was being described and it coming out of Cannes, what was being commended. But you're making it sound like Perfect Days, and I just fell completely in love with that movie. Mm-hmm. See, now I'm back to being scared.
I don't know if you will like this, just to be honest. Just knowing your taste and knowing how you felt about her short film, I'm not sure how you'll feel about this, but it's worth watching, I think, for you, just for Josh O'Connor alone. Isabella Rossellini is also great in it. It's at the top of my list for this year. It's funny because my number one and two of 2024 are Challengers and La Chimera.
Josh can do no wrong.
No, he can't. Easy nom. Okay, so let's get into one, a big buzzy one that we both saw. I saw The TV Glow. This is Jane Schoenbrunn's latest film. Their last film was We're All Going to the World's Fair. This was a big hit coming out of Sundance, and I think people are really, really connecting with this. It's hard to describe, and I'm wary of going into too many details about this just because I think you do just kind of need to experience it. I view this film as part coming of age, part horror, and I'm curious what you think about it because it's a tricky one. I think Jane here, they're channeling David Cronenberg, David Lynch, but also Charlie Kaufman a little bit. There's a little bit of I'm thinking of ending things in this. What did you think?
That kind of sums it up perfectly and why I didn't really connect with it. Cronenberg, mm-hmm. I realized that I've mixed on and that I really like some of his, but also fall short on many others. Lynch is not me. I think Cronenberg went there with Naked Lunch and I was like, can't do it. And then Kaufman and that movie, which we covered on the pod years ago, that was rough. Synecdoche, New York, also hard. It's just, there's a lot that they put into the mechanics of the filmmaking and in layered storytelling, which I understood in the beginning. I think the beginning of the film is really entrancing. And in seeing this child not know himself and his surroundings, and growing up in this school, having to go to high school and feeling lost. And then this friendship evolves. He makes this friend, Maddie. And it's really about finding their identity in each other and in trying to figure out how they feel. And they do this through a TV show called The Pink Opaque. And the final 30 plus minutes of this movie is mind-bending. And that didn't work on me, and it probably does for a lot of audiences and in why people are raving about it. It leaves you on a very interesting note. I think the time jumps in the film play into that too. But I think I left way more confused than I thought I would be when I started the movie. So overall, I think I see some of what they brought to the World's Fair, which I was really negative on. But I think the techniques that they're using here are really impressive. I think they're going to have a fantastic career, and I'm curious what's next. How did you feel about this one, though?
I had a really interesting experience watching this. When I first saw the trailer, it felt kind of like an A24 movie on steroids, like what we've come to think of, like what A24 puts out. And I really didn't know what to expect going into it. I think that anytime something has rave reviews, sometimes I'm a little skeptical going in. And I tried not to really read anything about this, and I didn't look anything up about it. And I have to say that I was deeply, deeply upset by the end of this, to the point that I had to put my sunglasses on walking home because I was crying about the ending. It's hard to describe, but I found the first section of the movie just very beautiful and melancholy as this coming of age story. And I think that when you think about this show, The Pink Opaque, and there are aspects of this film that I just naturally can't relate to. It's not a film that was made for me. I think that this is a film about the trans experience in particular. I think it's a really profound allegory about the trans experience. And so naturally, like, that's not going to be something that I'm going to relate to as much as other filmgoers. However, what I did find really relatable in the beginning section is just that idea of when you find something like a TV show or a film or a piece of art, music, when you're a teenager, that sort of community that you can build by loving something so much, and how your identity can get really wrapped up in that. And what I also thought was really cool about that was that loving something that much with another person creates a sense of belonging, but it also creates a sense of isolation. And I think that with this movie, Jane Schoenbrunn really understands the push-pull of that and the conflict there. And I think that when you think about those sorts of things that define you at that age, and then the distance created from them or from the people that you loved those things with, that's really painful. later on. And that just occurs naturally, I think. And the movie itself does a really good job of exploring that. There are parts of this that I really did find to be just too much, like they were just not on my wavelength, and that's okay. Again, I think that this is about a very particular experience and it's telling the story in a really real way. I think that what's interesting is that this movie's upsetting to me. It's very upsetting, but it's not manipulative. I think that this is actually creating a really authentic, dark portrayal of something through horror. And I hadn't really seen that in a long time, really since I'd watched Mulholland Drive. I think that this film, the best thing I can compare it to is something like Mulholland Drive, because that specific type of upset that I felt in what I realized this all meant for this character by the ending and how sad it all was reminded me of how I felt when I first saw Mulholland Drive. So I think that that film is far more successful. I mean, it's also been around for a really long time and I've had time to revisit it and really think about it and unpack it. And this one, I feel right now, at least, like it made me so viscerally sad that I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again. Maybe not for a really long time. And it's interesting because there are a lot of people who want to watch this 4, 5, 6 times. And I understand that people are going to think about it differently. But for me, I was very moved by it, very upset by it. It made me feel a lot. And I feel lucky to get to see something so original, I guess.
Mm-hmm. The way you explain it in terms of horror is how I felt about another movie called Love Lies Bleeding. This, I went into blind and came out buzzing about because of what it did in a similar way for this lesbian love story between Kristen Stewart's character and Katie O'Brien's character. It's directed by Rose Glass, and to me, this was Cronenberg meets De Palma noir. It has incredible sound work that makes your body itch, but also is really intense and keeps everything at a 10 the entire time. It builds to this beautiful conclusion and has some really strange special effects. Again, things I wasn't expecting to find in this like love story that by the end I was just so blown away by. I would really recommend seeing this if it's still in theaters or if it's on streaming soon.
I really want to see this. Two that we both saw. The first is Monkey Man, Dev Patel's directorial debut. This is this action-packed, very violent revenge thriller. What did you think of Monkey Man?
Dev Patel, there was some questionnaire or something that happened in London, I think. And it was like, who is your perfect man, no flaws? And everyone said Dev Patel. And I'm like, now I understand. As his directorial debut, it's fascinating. And it's more in a way of, if this is where he's starting, I cannot wait to see where he goes from here. Because the action in this movie, it's all filmed very well. The story, we've seen it before, but it has this really interesting perspective of him being Indian and incorporating these religious themes into it. But it was just a relentless pressure cooker of a movie that never stopped until the very end. And I think for a story that maybe parts we've seen before or the framework we've seen before, and in deciding to do this for your first feature, it was just so surprising. So I'm all for this. It's a nom. It's a flawed movie in ways, yes, but I am so ready for anything that he makes from here on out.
Yeah, I think I'll say soft nom here too, because I think this is a pretty successful directorial debut. I think for the really what I thought about when I left was I'm really excited to see what he does next. Did this 100% work for me? No, but I think there was enough in it to really excite you. And his influences are also so unique. I think he's really interested in, yes, those action revenge thrillers, but also in romance and in more traditional dramas and thinking about relationships between characters. It's a really stylish film. But I think it took a really long time for it to really get going for me. I think it took a lot of time to get there, about an hour. And I needed a little bit more clarity in the storytelling. But overall, I think it's a really impressive directorial debut. And yeah, Dev Patel, leading man in front of and behind the camera.
And then we had Problemista, Julio Torres's directorial debut. What did you think of this movie? Another A24 movie as well.
I really liked this. I thought this was a really great New York movie, a very Bushwick New York movie. I thought that Tilda Swinton was fabulous in this. And knowing that she referenced an unnamed New York Real Housewife for her performance, I wish that wasn't redacted in the interview. I think I have a pretty good idea. I think it's Ramona Singer, but I wish she would reveal because I think her performance is great. She's so over the top and zany and a menace completely. Just imagining working for this woman made me so anxious. But yeah, I thought this was really creative. It was really different. I could feel Julio Torres's point of view all throughout it. It's very weird, very out there. But that, I think, is what I liked about it. It just felt like this, I don't know, really original New York story and immigrant story. So I liked this. A nom from me.
I think ultimately it's too weird for me. Do I support A24 supporting these new filmmakers telling their own stories that I may not relate to? 100%. But I think the acting that we get out of it, we have like the most senile Karen that Tilda Swinton is playing. I don't know Housewives, but I loved what she was doing. And Julio as well, who is a star, a writer, a filmmaker in every way. And I'm excited to see what he makes next. Another one from Cannes last year was The Breaking Ice. That this is now on the Criterion Channel, so I highly recommend this. Everyone's coming out with their like threesome movie lists now that Challengers is out, and this is my recommendation. It is this very tense love triangle of a story that deals with being on the border of China and North Korea. So I highly recommend this. It's a quieter film, but also one that is very moving. Snack Shack is not a movie I ever thought I'd see and love, but here we are. I'm hard-nomming this. Gabriel LaBelle.
I need to watch this.
It's hilarious. It's like a new age Dazed and Confused meets The Way, Way Back from a few years ago. Funnily enough, with Nick Robinson, now in a very different role. But Gabriel LaBelle is just such a knockout, but also a flip from The Fabelmans. He just swears nonstop, but it's really funny because he fits the bill with this character. And I was also laughing and sobbing during this movie. I think it's a really funny tale about friendship, and it takes you back to high school summers where you have almost nothing to do. And your parents force you to do chores and cut the grass. And you make memories of stories that you'll remember for a lifetime. And it's just so much fun. I want to show everybody this movie that had such a horrid release. I feel so bad for it. It made under $1 million, like barely anything. And I think if it had a different marketing and release, could have done fairly well.
You're sobbing. Line just made me think that, do you know that I have every single movie from this year that I've cried during? I've tagged it on Letterboxd with Rur Cry.
Oh my God. Oh,
so
I
at the end
that.
Of the year, we could keep track of how many movies I've cried during that remind me of you.
Oh, that's amazing. I can't wait.
There are 9 so far this year.
That's a good amount. Hopefully that's number 10.
Yeah, I'm an emotional movie watcher. Speaking of tears, Robot Dreams. We both talked a lot about Robot Dreams during Oscar season, but wanted to bring it up again here. We don't need to review it again, but just want to give it, I think both of us wholeheartedly recommend Robot Dreams. It's finally coming out in theaters May 31st.
Highly, highly recommend. I was so happy when this was nominated at the Oscars. I'm glad this is getting a big release. It would be incredible to see on the big screen. So I will be doing that next week.
And our last movie that we both saw that premiered at South by Southwest is The Idea of You. It's based on the book of the same name. It stars Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galitzine. just think of the relationship between Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles, and you basically have the plot of the movie, except Anne Hathaway is playing a character named Solène, who is a real person. So it's this idea of she's this single mom, she's in her 40s, and she starts this whirlwind romance with the lead singer of August Moon, this very One Direction-esque band, and he's in his 20s. And I think you liked this more than I did, so we'll start with you.
I'll give this a nom. I did like this for what it is. There's nothing super deep about it. Anne's name being Solène, that was something I had to reckon with. And then she goes to Coachella against her better wishes and meets this guy in his trailer. Anne Hathaway walking into a trailer and using some random man's bathroom was also just a funny thought. I think part of why I liked it is just realizing Anne Hathaway made this movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I will also recommend the soundtrack on Spotify, which is just stupidly fun to listen to. But yeah, it's just really for the renaissance of Anne Hathaway and for us getting great comedies from her again. She mentioned The Princess Diaries many times during her press run for this movie, and I'm excited for what's ahead.
I think I just have to stick to my guns here and say this is a light bomb for me. I know that it's not trying to be a serious movie or anything like that, but I just kept thinking during this movie, this should not be a Michael Showalter movie. This should be a Nancy Meyers movie. I think it is begging for her eye. Mm-hmm. Michael Showalter is a director, that kind of like cornball thing with the split screens. Like it has this kind of artificiality to it that I wanted to feel a bit warmer. And I feel like Nicholas Galitzine for me just didn't have much charisma. And Anne Hathaway just ate him up. Like they were not evenly matched for me as stars. And I think I just needed someone with a bit more charisma because she is killing it in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If she were nominated for any kind of award for this, I would think it was 100% deserved. She is beautiful the entire movie. She is so good. She's so committed. I really loved her in this. And unfortunately, the man opposite her just couldn't live up to that. I needed like a Jacob Elordi.
No, I get that. I think this will skyrocket Nicholas even further as a star. But it is hard to have someone like Anne Hathaway against anybody who's new from an entirely new generation.
Yeah, but some have done it. Some can pull it off. I don't get him entirely. Maybe it's a me problem.
No, that's fair.
I wanted someone else next to her to really, I don't know, go for it alongside her. But it is fun, though. Like, it's cute. It's an easy watch.
And one other movie that I saw is Mars Express. It's an animated film that I think also came out at Cannes last year. Blew me away. It was this really hypnotic film that I didn't expect to love as much as I did, but this is one of my top two or three for the year so far. And it's like a riff on a dystopian, futuristic thriller, but it evolves quickly into this really complex story about humans and robots living together and what that means for the future. It has this Kubrickian script with really dazzling visuals. And there are just shocks along the way that are in service of the narrative. So it's not just for show. It's hard to explain because it takes a while to get into the mindset of the movie. But once you're there, your mind kind of expands in this weird way. But I loved being there. I would definitely rewatch this. This is a hard nom. I think it's one of the best animated films we had in years. And I think if you like anime in any respect, you should absolutely see this movie. So yeah, check it out. It's currently in theaters and hopefully will be streaming this summer sometime.
Well, that was our recap of 2024 at the movies so far. Let us know if you have any favorite releases from the year. Let's look ahead to the summer. We're almost at summertime. It's almost June, almost cancer season. What are some summer releases you're excited to see?
I cannot wait for Twisters, Lee Isaac Chung's next movie. I am so excited for Glenn Powell, and even getting a remake, just the trailer looks so adventurous and thrilling. I need to rewatch the original as well. But like I mentioned with horror, we have so many horror movies coming this summer. I'm excited for way too many of them. Cuckoo with Hunter Schafer, but more so Maxine with Mia Goth ending this trilogy. And I'm excited for this to bring it all together. And In a Violent Nature, which had some screenings recently that have audiences just totally nauseous. And I love horror like that. I'm really looking for some big screams this summer on the big screen. What about you? What are you most excited to see?
Speaking of horror, I'm really excited to see Long Legs. All of these little snippets they're teasing. The marketing campaign has been great. It feels like a 70s throwback, but also reminds me a bit of Silence of the Lambs. So very excited for that. I believe Nicolas Cage is playing a serial killer. Sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Twisters. If spring was Josh O'Connor season, summer is Glenn Powell season, because I am so excited to also see Hitman, which I feel like has been at so many festivals and I had opportunities to see it and just kept missing it. So I'm excited to finally see Hitman very soon.
I cannot wait for you to see this. I'm definitely rewatching this. This is a nom. I'll say that.
Good.
Very funny. If it gets Glenn Powell nominated at the Kids' Choice Awards, at the MTV Movie Awards, I think it could happen.
I actually wonder if he could get a screenplay nomination with Richard Linklater.
Possible. Yeah.
It's a weird year.
So next time on Oscar Wilde, we'll be talking about another summer film, Furiosa, which has gotten incredible reviews out of Cannes and its premiere there, which I am very happy with and a little surprised by. So we'll be reviewing that film and recapping Cannes, all about the films that premiered there, what did well, maybe what didn't, what will be coming out later this year, and maybe have some awards potential along the way.
I can't wait for that. Thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Oscar Wilde Pod. And you can also find bonus content on Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.